A very good afternoon to you. It is The Property Show. It's Sunday. We're taking a look at the headline stories for the property and real estate sector. Ludmila Yamalova is here with me, Desley Humphrey, if you've got any questions. And also follow me on Twitter, at Desley Humphrey, and shoot me a direct message or send in your questions on Twitter. Now, Ludmila, the shoreline maintenance fee row, the article that was in the paper, I think yesterday, from the National this morning. Now, it's talking about the official registration of the owners' associations for the shoreline apartments. That's along the Palm Jumeirah. Now, it has been stalling for quite some time. I think that there are five left to go. Is that right?
Right, that's right. There are 13 associations, or 13 buildings in general. There are four, 13 associations to be. And up until now, eight associations have been registered with the land department, and basically there were five remaining. And so the latest story relates to those five remaining, and also touches upon on what it really means to be registered.
Okay, so
including those eight associations that have already been registered.
So the eight have already been registered. What does it mean for them, and what's now changed for the five that are yet to be registered?
Okay, well, with regards to the eight that have been registered, once again, it's a bit of a misnomer to call these associations to be registered, because they've up until now, those associations are only still registered with the land department, and therefore, for all intents and purposes, they're still only interim associations because they are not yet independently registered with DED, and therefore are not yet independent legal entities. The latest update about the associations having been registered, that were sort of described in a celebratory term, really were somewhat misleading, because it doesn't really mean anything. Until associations are registered as legal entities with DED, they really cannot do any more than they have been able to do. And there,
right.
And I think this article from this morning from the National refers to the same scenario, which is while associations have been formed, and with that formation, they were all hopeful that they would be able to take control and take charge of the associations a lot more than before. Nothing has changed. There are a few comments from the members of the associations that have been formed, that have been registered with RERA, and their feedback is that, there hasn't been any positive development, no change whatsoever, now that the associations are registered.
Okay, but it feels like there is a bit of a limbo situation because there's some documents that they've been required to sign.
Those associations, interestingly enough, the first eight associations, the board members were asked to sign documents, one set of documents that relates to the code of conduct of the board members. And the interesting slant on that is that the five remaining associations were asked to sign what was supposed to be the same document, but there were some substantial differences, and I'll get to the differences shortly. But with regards to the first eight associations that signed the document, the document is called the Code of Conduct, and it actually is taken almost verbatim from the Strata Regulations and the Jointly Owned Property Constitution, which were passed by RERA over a year and a half ago, basically dictate the terms for board members to join the board, and sort of the Code of Ethics, if you will, such as they must not have any kind of conflict of interest, they must act fairly and honestly, and they must act in the best interest of the association and not in their own personal interest.
Mm-hmm.
That particular verbiage actually comes straight from the Constitution, the Jointly Owned Property Constitution, and it's of no surprise, because when you do elect a board, you elect them to actually act on behalf of the entire association, i.e. multiple, if not hundreds of owners, and therefore, you basically give that limited body of people to make decisions on your behalf, and therefore it is only reasonable, if not and necessary to require that selected group of people to abide by certain principles and sort of code of conduct.
Right.
So that's as far as the first eight associations are concerned, and actually other associations that had been previously in other developments that had previously been registered have had to sign the same document, and so it was no surprise. What was a surprise is is the development of last week, where the five remaining associations were asked to sign what was supposed to be a very similar code of conduct document, but actually ended up being rather different.
It's called the Declaration of Compliance and Ethical Guidelines.
Yes, it's called a Declaration of Compliance and Ethical Guidelines. Mm-hmm. And so the first part of that document actually is almost once again verbatim from the from the code mm-hmm. of conduct from the jointly owned property constitution, and which basically refers to basically principles and code of conduct for the board members, and right. the board members have to abide by. And then the last provisions, the last two provisions actually now require. The board members to sign, not just on behalf of the board members themselves, but also owners' associations and association manager. So if all the previous provisions refer only to board members, the duties of the board members, the last provision refers to owners' associations, board members, and association managers. And what's more interestingly is that in this particular provision, first of all, this document for the first time appears bilingual, so in English and Arabic. That's one sort of new development. And the other one, so this new provision that requires now owners' association, board members, and association managers to basically not have any kind of contact with the media. Mm-hmm. And I'll read verbatim the English translation. It says, owners association, board members, and association managers are not permitted to use any form of media, including internet, radio, paper, telephone, digital media, or any other form of media. For the purpose of discussing or complaining about private issues related to the association or any board member or any dispute relating to the association. Mm-hmm. So this particular provision is a new provision, and it's interesting at many different levels. One, that all of a sudden, it brings in the owner associations at large and association managers and not just the board members. And two, and I guess more importantly, is that it disallows any sort of contact with the media regarding issues related to the association. The third aspect of it is that while the English translation refers to these issues as being more, relating more to private issues or complaints about the association of the board members or disputes relating to the association, the Arabic version is actually a lot broader. Not that I read Arabic, but we have run this translation by a number of Arabic experts, and so in Arabic, actually, that clause refers more to just the board members and associations are not allowed to talk to the media about any issues related to the association in general, mm-hmm. not just private issues, and there's no mentioning of any complaints or disputes. So just in the Arabic version, once again, just basically disallows anyone that's in that association, be it the board members or the members at large, to talk about any issues mm-hmm. related to the association with the media. And that would obviously include any sort of internet forum, such as
Facebook. Is this common, this kind of clause, in other homeowners associations anywhere else?
And not at all. In fact, this is the first time, and we've been monitoring this particular industry for quite closely for quite some time. This is the first time this clause has appeared, and I will tell you, I've reviewed all the jointly owned property regulations, constitution, declarations, and the strata law itself, and even the privacy laws, the media laws, and this particular clause does not have any authority or bearing in anything, in any sort of legal precedent so far.
So where does this put the homeowners associations as far as the pressure they can exert or the power they can have? I mean, does it directly impact them at all?
Well, I think it actually, in many ways, many would argue, probably justifiably so, that it would it has the potential of impairing their ability to affect change or to have, to have their voices heard. Because as we've seen so far, and this obviously reasonable minds can differ on this subject, but a lot of homeowners have felt that they've kind of hit a bit of a brick wall, and their only avenue to have their voices heard and to have their grievances aired were through the media, because they were not really making any progress with either the developers or the land department, and therefore the only way forward for them was, at least in a lot of owners' mind was, to have at least their complaints aired through the media and kind of allow for that sort of public dialogue. And it's only then, again, you know, this is by, according to the reports of many, that only then they felt that they were basically taken more seriously. You know, obviously media cannot resolve your disputes, but just airing them out and kind of drawing attention to these issues, they felt that they were taken more seriously, and there was a lot more sort of development progress took place once those issues became public. Mm-hmm. So therefore, you know, this particular clause, if they do sign on to it, it would take away that ability for them to communicate, and that's to communicate not just with the media, more importantly, it's also, it would disallow the owners themselves to, you know, have their own setup, their own Facebook accounts, for example, or, you know, a Twitter account or any other internet media to just basically discuss these issues related to association, even amongst themselves, because, you know, it would involve media, you know, just even if it's an internal forum, because it does involve the use of the internet, under this particular provision, the way, because it's so broad, you know, that too would fall under it.
So this is a scenario of kind of one step forward, two steps backwards as far as the homeowners associations and what they are wanting to achieve.
Most definitely. And also what's interesting is that, there's another new clause at the end, and then it says that, acknowledge that I have read the instructions and understand to comply with the above term. I accept full legal liability in the case of false or misleading representation. And so therefore, you know, if you sign on to this and then somebody ends up talking about these issues that may be perceived to be related in one way or another to the association, you know, it can, under this particular clause, it may result in all sorts of liabilities, including criminal liabilities.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to The Property Show.